It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I had one of my favorite things happen.
Oh?
I got yet another entry to my eventual coffee table book about song lyrics that are absolutely ridiculous out of context. I've talked about these before. Some of them, such as Prince's Touch, If You Will, My Stomach, which I think might end up being the title of the coffee table book. Even some really great ones that are the fucking title. Elton John, Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer. I mean, the fact that none of us think that sounds weird now is a matter of time and repetition. It's not because it's not fucking weird.
I still think it sounds weird.
It is. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
But it like, is. If you say it, it's nowadays it's weird of like, why did somebody put that in that famous song? Like, as opposed to similar things that would be like, why did a human mouth put those sounds together? Like this one, yeah, I'm like, oh, right. No, it's because it's that. But I'm like, yeah. It's still.
Huh.
But anyway, so YouTube in its infinite esoteric wisdom throws at me the music video for Natalie Imbruglia's hit Smoke. It's a lesser known one. She's mostly known for Torn and some hits, but this was a sort of hit that happened after that. It's a song I really like. I was a Natalie Imbruglia fan for a hot second, and I do really like the song, so I play the song. It's very nice. It's a pop ballad. It's very dark and sad. And it has, depending on how you count it, two verses or four verses. It has four stanzas. Two of them happen and then a refrain, and two of them happen and a refrain. So it's got four of these. And I don't know what the song is about, but it has a lot of dark, moody, angsty connotations. There's implications of potential abuse. There's bits about moms looking bad and all the stuff, and sad, forgot how to cry. Very 90s and 2000s. I'm an angsty teen vibe, but I mean, it's dark shit. I would not be surprised if it's like, yeah, this came out of an actual abuse story or whatever. I also noticed this time though that in each of these four stanzas that comprise the verses of the song, in each stanza, line three is identical.
Okay.
And line three, in all of these stanzas, with all of this dark, moody, depressing things, is, what's up with that? Like, what's up with that? I mean, dark, scared, mom's looking bad. Where are you, dad? What's up with that?
What's up?
You're
with that?
Hurting me. Like the next line, you're hurting me. But in between, like, what's up with that? Like, and I mean, I try and be nice, and I'm like, this was written in an earlier time, I think 2009. But in any event, it is the time before SNL created the recurring gag of Kenan Thompson at his show, What's Up With That?
Which is awesome.
So I'm trying to isolate it from that, but it's so hard.
It is.
Like, it's so...
Yeah.
Somebody's done a mashup. I need to look for it. But even back then, it just sounds... I mean, it sounds like 800 stand-up opening 5 minutes I've ever heard. Like, what's up with, like I expected the chorus to then be like, you've been reading the news lately? Like, it just feels. And I'm trying to think back. I'm like, is there a time when it didn't? I mean, not since like the 80s, even back then. Like, what's up with that? Like, that's. I don't understand why the song, and I still like the song. It's a very pretty song. It's a very emotional song, except for four very specific points in it where now I'm going to just snicker every time. Yeah. I should also, I hear TikTok does a lot of lip syncing. I should find out if people have been doing this song, and I want to see how they portray the what's up with that one. Hello, everyone. Ezzy's right next to me, and she's like, sleeping. She's like, "What the fuck are you doing, old man?"
She said, "What's up with that?
What's up with that?" Ooh-wee. I hate that sketch so fucking.
I think
much.
It's hilarious.
I watch it every time, all the way through, and I fucking hate it. The only podcast in the world that, let's be honest, I think I finally figured it out. The whole reason we do this podcast is we are trying to normalize podcasting. And I think some people would say we've succeeded looking at the general scope of things, but we still feel that the barrier to entry is perceived at a height that we think is unfair. And we keep trying to show you can have an enormous podcast empire. You can have a guaranteed legacy of at least 12 years with virtually no money, no effort, and no talent. So the only podcast in the world, and you can too. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 594.
You gotta laugh louder for people who listen to audio. He was laughing a lot during that. And that I don't good. Like it when they think you're just giving me dead silence. He thought it was funny. If you don't think it's funny, that's on you. William thought it was funny. William's funny. My applause-o-meter. And it was the needle moved. For those of you, oh God,
you don't move.
It's been such a couple of weeks. What day is it? I don't even know what's. If this is your first time joining us, I mean, what's up, cowboy? This is it.
What's up with that?
Like. Make your move or get out. This is, you're not getting anything better out of this. So either you are vibing at this point or you should leave. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Ever hungry for emails, our listeners write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Notes, comments, topics, questions, anything they want, and frequently shit that they just had to scrape together at the last second because we whined that if you don't feed the hat dies. And they, being great sports, were like, God damn it, I literally do not have anything else I want these guys to talk about that I want to listen to. So, but I got to come up with something because I'm ride or die, damn it. So that happens. Anyway, the hat magically on its own emails us the emails and we read them and we talk about them. That's it. So it has been not quite 2 weeks, week and a half since we actually last recorded. For you all, it's been a week. That's how it works.
Yeah.
So how's your week and a half been?
Oh, usual stuff. But last night we saw, was it last night? I think it was last night. We saw Lightyear.
Oh.
Have you seen it?
No.
Not interested?
No.
I was super.
I do believe I watched the Honest trailer and the pitch meeting of it, but no, I didn't give a shit.
Well, I haven't watched those. Anyway, I was super interested in it because I heard a lot of bad things about it after it was released, but I was super interested in it because I just thought it was such a great idea. And I still think it's a great idea. I like this kind of content, Space Rangers has been around for 100 years now in film and stories. And I always love those stories. So I thought, well, to do it with, Buzz Lightyear seems like a good idea. Like I said, I still think it's a good idea. If you're gonna do something like this,
this isn't good. I look like I'm saluting you. I'm sorry. I should adjust that.
If you're gonna do something like this, a lot of things come into it. If you're gonna make a Buzz Lightyear movie, and the idea is that this is gonna be the movie that Andy saw that got him so excited about Buzz Lightyear, and presumably a lot of other kids too. Yeah, because
they put that continuity in, which I'm like, that feels dangerous.
Okay, well, first of all, they say in 1995. This has
some George Lucas prequels feel to it that make me nervous.
Yeah, they say, in 1995, Andy saw this movie or whatever. But here's the thing.
NASA launches the last of America's deep space probes aboard this ship. Buzz Lightyear.
It doesn't. It's weird because, they say 1995 because of when Toy Story came out and stuff like that. But I think by doing that, they set up some expectations that the film might resemble a film that you could have seen in 1995.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that specifically a child would be excited about.
Now, see, that's more the point right there. It doesn't. The fact is, they don't care about it having anything to do with 1995. But what they do care about, the most important part, is that Andy would have liked this movie. Andy would have liked this movie, and it would have made him and a lot of his friends apparently think that Buzz Lightyear was the greatest. So you have to take that into
account. Right before his birthday.
If you're going to say this is the movie that Andy saw, that it's got to feel like, not in a 1995 sense, but in a, I could see Andy getting really excited about this movie. He's got to feel like that. But also Buzz Lightyear as a character, he's as a toy. He, even though he's Buzz Lightyear, the toy, he supposedly has all these personality characteristics that are like the character, that he's based on. And also, you've seen a Buzz Lightyear video game in the movies, so that gives you kind of a visual sense of maybe what it should look like and how he should be. So you have to sort of work that in and be true to that somehow. But also, like I said, Space Ranger stuff has been around for almost 100 years now. And so,
200 in Japan.
That's the thing. The whole reason they made that character, Buzz Lightyear, a Space Ranger, is because of the long history in American media of, that kind of thing. So to me, you've got to get those three things right. You've got to somehow honor this idea of this is the movie that inspired Andy. You've got to honor the character of Buzz Lightyear that you've already established. And you also have to make a good Space Ranger movie. Now, to me, Pixar is well positioned to be like the perfect studio to accomplish all three of these things.
So we got the three.
Yeah.
How did they do out of three?
Okay. I want to give kudos to the visual. I knew
his answer wasn't going to just be a number, folks, just so you know.
I give kudos to the visual people because that part was right. It looked right. Everything looked right. And I need to also say that I thought Chris Evans did a fine job, portraying, the guy,
this can't character. Figure out why they wouldn't want Tim Allen.
This person looked like Buzz, acted like Buzz, all that was fine. But if before this movie was ever made, they handed me the script, said, read this, William, and tell us what you think. I would have explained
thrown scalding coffee in their face.
I would explain those three things that I just explained to you. And I would have said, you don't do any of these three things. Not one. Not one. This is, first of all,
big goose egg.
There's almost There's almost no space rangering in it. Practically none. There's very little space actually in it. There is.
Very, very little space rangering. I think may have beat out What's Up With That and What's Up Cowboy for our title.
But that's a big thing because that is important to, okay, so being true to Buzz Lightyear's character, he is a space ranger. That's his whole thing.
Yeah, it's a genre defining characteristic.
If you're not going to have him doing that, why is he even a thing? And more to the point, there was nothing in this film that I think any child would go to a movie theater and see this movie and be inspired by it and want all the action figures and stuff. There's just nothing in there. I don't think that any kid would
somehow
think, oh,
when you
great.
Said any child, I legit am picturing like a 5-year-old just with a ticket by himself.
Not Andy.
And then walks out looking not upset, but just profoundly disappointed.
But not like Andy, 5-year-old not
disappointment. Just like
not Andy, not Andy's friends. And why? Because there wasn't it didn't seem like a movie made for them. It didn't seem like I've heard people criticize it and say, well, this movie's made for really young audiences or something. No, it isn't. I don't know what audience it was made for, but kids is not one of them. And
no, the bits I've heard and what I know of the plot and stuff, it's a cool sounding story, but it's a lot of nuance and it's not a kid. It's very little happens in the plot.
That's right. If this was a live action, not a live action movie and not a Buzz Lightyear movie, it was just like a space movie that someone had made just for the drama of it or whatever, it might've been fine. Might've been a perfectly good movie. I'm not sure I would have liked it because nothing would really be happening that I'm interested in, but this has Buzz Lightyear in it. This is supposed to be that kind of thing. And it's also supposed to be that in a way that would appeal to kids, which by the way, if it was that way in a way that appeals to kids, it would be that way in a way that appeals to adults too. That's just how it works.
Yeah, I mean, Pixar.
That's why we.
But yeah, we're talking 4-color action, and instead, from what I've heard, it's basically a mediocre Twilight Zone plot, which could be cool if it was done like it was Twilight Zone. But picture Twilight Zone done as 4-color action.
Yeah, I mean, think of even the most recent space rangery things you can think of, like Guardians of the Galaxy and the first one, if you don't like the rest of them, you know, they're in space, they're going to lots of places in space. there's an action driven a crisis driven plot. I mean, you know, that's actually not rocket science, no pun intended. It's not that Pixar should be able to do this, but they pick a plot.
Did not have a TV show?
Well,
wasn't there an animated Buzz Lightyear TV show where he's just space rangering?
There was. Now, I always, my headcanon for the whole Toy Story thing was that Buzz was based on a cartoon. I just always thought that. And then they came out with a cartoon, but the cartoon is very much geared to really little kids to a point where it's hard for an adult to enjoy it much. I mean, I've seen some of them, and I like them all right, but it's...
Some Teen Titans Go bullshit.
I don't know. It's just...
Or is it some Dora the Explorer bullshit? Does Buzz frequently need you to repeat things back to it?
Not quite like that, no, but... It didn't work for me, and that's saying something, because I really do like Buzz Lightyear, and I really do like that kind of content. I mean, I don't mind it even being a little geared to younger kids, if they leave adults or older people completely behind in the content, it's going to lose me. And so, yeah, the cartoon, and I don't remember how long the cartoon even ran. I don't think it's still going. But I thought this film was a really good idea. But I mean, like I said, if someone gave me this script, I'd say, this is not a Buzz Lightyear script. This isn't a space adventure script, really, even. I mean, it's in space, sort of. But if you think that this is a good script for this project, you don't know Space Rangers, you don't know Buzz Lightyear, and you don't know the Toy Story property and Andy in it. You just don't even understand those things, because there's no way you could think that this would work.
Having spoken with his wife, I'm going to preempt here and say it was during this point when he was standing giving this speech during the end credits that the ushers finally came in and dragged him out. So William will be unable to answer if there is a post-credit sequence.
I feel bad because maybe some people like this movie, and I don't mean...
Surprisingly few so far.
I don't mean to criticize anyone who likes it, but I don't...
Critically, it is not done well at all. I don't know about box office, but critically, it has not done well.
I just don't even understand. And
from what I can tell, because of the shit YouTube is throwing at me because I broke my algorithm hard, it managed to also politically offend both primary sides of political discourse in this country.
Oh, really? Now, I understand the whole gay kiss or whatever. Some people don't like that.
Yeah, that one's easy, but no.
What's the other side?
I don't remember the exact argument for it. I think it may just be we like Buzz Lightyear. No, but I did think that there were, I don't know, I'm pulling this off of YouTube headlines, so I can't remember. Because I eventually got too many videos that had things like woke in the title, and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're, like I said, it looked good. And as far as the design and casting of Buzz, it was fine. But it was just, it was simply not a Buzz Lightyear or even a good space adventure story. And I just don't even understand how anyone could have read that script and thought, yeah, this is the thing. It baffles me, really. But there it is. I wouldn't mind if they made more, because I think given the good design, and the fact that I think Chris Evans was a good fit for this and everything looked good, I think they could take another shot at it and get it right. But man,
they should start doing like the old Ernest films. Buzz Lightyear goes to jail, Buzz Lightyear scared stupid, Buzz Lightyear goes to Africa. We should probably retool that one heavily, avoid problems of the past.
I've got an idea. How about Buzz Lightyear actually tackles a galactic-sized problem that takes him all over the galaxy? How about that?
All right. Two notes.
That would at least be
generally in the right generally genre. Like it. But two notes. One, a little too long. Can we trim it a little bit? Second, never before has anyone done such a spot-on impression of my father-in-law in my lifetime. You became Red Turner.
Which is dad for just a second. Wow.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that was really... I mean, I think you became a whole lot of dads. But for me, it was specifically my father-in-law right there.
I don't know.
It's probably because my dad was a West Coaster, so it didn't have the same vibe.
I don't think I'm asking too much here. It's just a movie.
What's up with that?
I mean, put in just a little effort. That's all I'm asking. No, but if they, I don't think they'll ever have another one. But if they did, I will definitely, absolutely watch it and hope, learn their lesson.
I mean, they'll definitely really cool. Have something leveraging Toy Story. Whether or not it's specific to this sort of...
Well, it's a great idea as long as they show up to do it. The design team showed up. Chris Evans showed up. Everybody else phoned it in or something. I don't know.
Hey, there's probably a very good voice cast all around there, so be nice.
It's true. You're right about that. Everyone in the voice cast did fine. But, I mean, they didn't have to do fine. Chris Evans had to do fine. He had to do really well, and I thought he did. So,
so has that catapulted into you're going to see the Gray Man?
I don't know. I mean, you know, they're pushing it. You know, you see it everywhere.
Yeah, on
television. I mean, I don't. Why would I watch it? What's it about?
Right. That's well. I mean, the whole reason apparently is watch Chris Evans as a villain facing off against Ryan Gosling, and that's exciting.
I guess. I don't know.
Two problems. The two main reasons I'm not going to watch it.
Oh, okay.
One, I've seen a Jason Bourne movie. These are all the fucking same. Like I can tell you right now, he used to be a killer for hire or worked for the CIA, I think. And then he stopped. And now he's being dragged back in because something's going on that everybody doesn't know about. There's some secret hinky shit. Guess what? The CIA does some scary unrecorded shit. Woohoo! And so now he has to fight. And, you know, at the end, maybe he dies. Maybe he kills the other guy. Maybe they team up against the big bad we didn't know about. But there's still only a handful of things that might possibly happen.
But I mean, this is a genre, right? I mean, it's like heist movies. There's a lot of the stuff that's all the same. And people watch it.
Yeah, it's worse than the genre. It's a screenplay. It's a Mad Lib screenplay.
Give me a noun.
Yes, yes. A
apple.
Gender assassin works for organization. Like that, yeah, absolutely.
No, you're not organization. You say a fruit, and then the organization is the name of the fruit. That kind of thing.
Okay. It's like, you must not. But there is a category just called MacGuffin, and you just have to come up with something. It's like, okay, tennis racket, context the dead, and also can make a nuclear explosion for some reason. Do it. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Gray Man. Oh, second reason. Man, yeah. Second reason, Red Nose.
What? Oh,
Red Notice.
You think it's a, you think once. It's just, yeah. Well,
like, no, yeah, Netflix.
I feel that way too.
I mean, I will not watch a famous person leading action movie on Netflix until real life people explain to me why I should. Because I did it once and I don't know why I should.
Yeah.
Wasn't bad. If it was bad, I might be more on board. But I'm like, no, it was an intravenous feeding tube. Like, it was nothing. Like, it was a movie-ass movie.
The Pop Rocks of movies.
The Pop Rocks of movies.
Yeah.
Walk me through that one.
Well, at first, seems like a good idea. And, you know, when you're actually consuming it, it still seems like a good idea for a little while. And then you realize, man, this is just a bunch of sugar. And this is, I'm not going to spend more money on this.
I fucking love this. Now you're getting awkward. And I understand you are probably getting awkward because you are realizing no one in the history of the world has used this metaphor before.
Probably not.
I fucking love it. I am here for it. I am going to be using this term in the future because I'll tell you, there are a lot of things that have a pop rocks of those things.
Oh, really?
I just made it up. Mostly thanks to the internet, life is largely pop rocks. Oh, you laugh. I made myself like physically sad.
Well,
also, life is mostly pop rocks. We're not going to beat that.
Well, you can take comfort in knowing that we are not the Pop Rocks podcast because nobody thinks this is a good idea.
No. Fucking bottom of the pocket, has some lint on it, unspecified hard candy. You know, the kind that it's like green or yellow, and you're like, I can think of a remarkable number of totally disparate flavors that could equate to that color.
Right.
Like, it is. We are the messy, unprofessional glucose tablet of the podcast world.
There you go.
Where, when you're going into shock and you just need something, or when your child will not shut up of podcasting.
Nice.
We should do a question.
Okay. Who's gonna read it? Who's
you? I think it's your turn.
All right.
I wonder if I'm at all accurate when I try and guess between episodes.
Jazz wants to know.
What does Jazz want to know?
If you could choose where you were born. Well, before I read this, Beth seemed kind of upset with us about how we handled her question. For one, she said I pronounced the hotel wrong, which maybe I did. I thought I read it right from the, but I, you know, I can't see very good. So maybe I did that wrong. But also she had a lot of complaints there, didn't she?
I mean, you haven't talked about it in a while, have you?
No.
I don't know that that's Beth's mode, but it's always been her mode with me.
I mean,
Beth and I were friends before the podcast started, and we actually worked with each other. And my relationship with Beth has never not been, I genuinely can't figure out why I still associate with you, Tony.
Okay. Well, like, I mean,
don't get me wrong, I've leaned into it, but that has always been our dynamic.
It was funny as long as it was kind of supposed to be funny.
But if I don't know. It's been like 15 years and I don't know. I just know that's how it is.
Okay.
And also, having met me, I do not in the slightest blame her. I feel like you get some splash damage by associating with me. But by and large, I mean, I say dumb shit in my life in general, but I do specifically say dumb shit to drive Beth insane.
Well, okay.
And she's just that great combination of, she really wants to make sure people understand correctly, and also she's smart and knowledgeable enough to do it. So whenever she comes back, I'm like, this is no bullshit here. But then I just say some more shit. Yeah.
Anyway. But we love her. We both do. We're glad she's listening and commenting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She is one of the originals I recall, because I remember every Thursday I would go to my cubicle, which was next to her cubicle, and be like, I put up a new thing. You have to listen to it.
She was with us in the 100th episode along with Mark.
Yeah, she was literally in the room with Mark. Who else was there? Was there somebody else there? I'm going to be embarrassed. I mean, Trish was there. Was that it? Mark and Beth and Trish? Dave wasn't there, I don't think. All right. If you were in that library room and you're still listening, let me know. I'm sorry.
Jazz asks, if you could choose where you were born and raised, and she says, and have all the same family and friends that you were raised with. So she doesn't want, well, if I was born here, I wouldn't know so-and-so or such and such. Like, you'd still be married to Trish.
I want to be born in the Vanderbilt estate. I mean,
Vanderbilt, the Vanderbilt estate.
Oh, sorry.
Vanderbilt.
Even.
Anyway, we shouldn't get hung up on that part.
No, which means this is a bad question, Jazz. I mean, or I should say, it's only a bad question because you did not specify it is only for me.
If you could choose where you were born and raised, caveat, in any place in the world, would you choose the place you actually grew up or someplace different, and why? And you're right, that is only for you, because of course I'd pick
this. Well, I mean, it does take, okay, now that you've spelled it out, it does take a dessert. But I feel like, Jazz, you already knew the answer to that one. But then again, the other day, somebody asked William if he'd had a tequila sunrise. So what the fuck do I know?
But she does ask why. Like, why would I pick that place again? But do people know that?
Have you met him?
Okay, so people know. That's fine. I'm glad.
And it's levels. It's levels. It's not just an appreciation for one's hometown. It's an obsession with the state and the region. Like, William, one of two things happened. Either William was literally the universe, like, apparently, like, if there's some sort of spirit entity that is supposed to defend an area or whatever, William was born in the straight heart of, like, what his whole life is dedicated towards preserving and celebrating and honoring. Like he is where down, I would imagine, to the hospital bed, or were you born actually in a bar?
I wish that'd be awesome. Because here's the thing. I love the farm I grew up on. Like, you're right. Levels.
Wait, let me get to the second possibility.
There are levels. Said,
that is right, one possibility. Before you go on, I want to get the second one. The second one is William essentially had a psychotic break at birth. And one of the major aspects of it is he decided, wherever the hell I am is the best place in the world. And I dedicate my soul to just thinking it's so awesome.
It could be both of those things.
This sounds like actually a really cool horror movie thing where, like, was it really like, oh, that's cool. it's like Frailty, but with William and his blind love of Iowa.
The best way I can explain it, though, is the farm I grew up on. If anyone's ever read Calvin and Hobbes, and if you got a warm, wonderful feeling from any scene where he and Hobbes are like walking through the woods and jumping over brooks and all that stuff. Yeah, that was my life living on this farm. It was amazing. I loved it. It's shaped me in so many ways. It's nothing else probably has made me who I am more than that experience with my family and that community. So yeah, I mean, that's just how it is. But it's all centered on that farm for sure. I mean, the land I grew up on was very formative for me personally, and I'm sure it will be till the day I die.
Yeah. So William's upbringing was a literal comic strip.
It kind of was.
So point in favor of the second theory.
See, you're figuring it out, whatever it is.
And then puberty is when it all turned from being a comic strip into little sock puppets. So that was weird.
Hey, I had a sock puppet that I used for church, church children's stories or whatever. You know, there's in the middle of the church service, a lot of people who grew up in church can tell you this. There's a moment where someone tells the kids a little story, and we would do that. And I had a sock puppet that I used.
I do not have the power of language to express the joy I felt of just hearing. Like, I want this to be my ringtone now, William. Just like, hey, I had a sock puppet there for church.
What was for? I barely used it for anything else, if I recall.
The tiny amount of indignancy at the front that I would not acknowledge his sock puppet powers, and then the vibe in the middle, because you pause just right that, like, for a second you couldn't remember why you had it, then you're like, for church.
Well, I was trying to think if there was anything else besides church, but I don't think there was. I think I only used it for that. I didn't think of it as a thing that was just for church, though. I mean, it was a puppet I made. I think when I originally made it, I was in, I don't remember where I was, but I made it for some other thing, and quickly, like, whatever the thing was, and I can't remember, there was some type of entertainment for the kids that fell through, and so the kids weren't going to have this little entertainment thing, whatever it was, kind of like the clown not showing up for a kid's birthday or whatever it was. I don't remember.
And you were, and like, I'm wearing one sock.
No, somehow.
How can I help?
I don't even remember where these socks came from, but they were red and kind of fuzzy or whatever. I mean, they weren't my socks. I don't know who gave them to me, but I think I said to the person, all right, well, what do you have? And so they had these socks, and they had a ping pong ball, and they had a back scratcher. So, and they had some cardboard. So I used the cardboard to give shape to the mouth, and I, you know, did the whole Kermit thing, and I cut the ping pong ball in two. And so I made some eyes, you know. And then I put the other sock over the back scratcher and put a rubber band on there so you could kind of see the hand. And when I ran the head, I had a hand that would kind of come up and sort of rest on the wall or whatever, and then sometimes would express. I just used that just as to express some of the things he said, or to cover his face when he was embarrassed and things like that. And it worked really well, so I kept using it for other things. And I did that for, a few years, actually. I used this puppet named Russell.
If you know the episode of The Waltons that William cribbed that entire childhood experience from, tell us on the blog.
I wasn't a child.
TheMagicalTalkingHat.com.
I was in my 20s when all that happened.
So it'll be an episode where I'm going to guess this is the B plot. Involves whichever Walton's in their 20s. I've literally never seen the show.
I might have had like
this is a plot from the Waltons.
I might have had a night to figure it out. Like, not, it wasn't like right there. The thing
in my head, the plots from the Waltons are just the plots from Little House on the Prairie, but like slightly more modernized. Is that maybe accurate?
And I can't swear to it, but maybe it was just for church. Maybe that was the first time. I don't know. But I don't think it was. Maybe it was. Someone who knows me and remembers this time in my life could probably say, but I don't know if I interact with anybody who knew me back then. And some
if
of them,
you know, William,
sadly, are probably dead.
Tell the local authorities.
Oh, come on. You know, if I had a tape of me doing that puppet and stuff, you'd want to see it.
Oh, hell yeah. As soon as we are done here, I'm going to try and come up with every conceivable phrasing to see if somebody found it and put it on YouTube.
I don't know. I thought it was pretty
good.
I would
watch the shit out of that. That would be
a lot of
screensaver.
Kids loved it. I got a lot of positive feedback from adults, too. That was pretty good.
See, how do I put this?
You need to answer Jazz's question instead of just making
it. No, I got this story. Sounds like the Midwestern white boy version of a Jazz childhood story. Like, equally unusual with slight amounts of trepidation and a little hint of whimsy, but also with like zero stakes. And then the Melchert Dallas Methodist children were sad that Sunday. Because William beefed it with his stupid sock puppets. But it has that same vibe. It has that same, like, this is a story. This isn't a thing that happened. This is an episode of TV. Like, that's the difference, is you get to be an episode of TV, whereas Jazz's stuff is all like out of Dickens novels.
Yeah. Well, or a comic book. Or a newspaper comic, I guess is what it was.
That was your childhood.
Yeah, that was my childhood. So how do you answer this question?
I want to do a deep dive with like a cork board and red string of like, William claims this happened to him as a child. This comic strip here, you can clearly see Calvin.
That's good. I like that.
I want to have the whole thing. Here? Oh.
All right, where would you?
I think he had a tiger. No, wait. The tiger. It was a rooster. Oh, that's the connection. Hobbs? There's just a card by itself that says Hobbs equal rooster, ? And it's been circled several times in Sharpie.
Okay. Where do you want to be born and raised?
Well, okay. What I'd like to do, if I may, is just pick apart this question in a really unfun way that amuses me.
Sure. So,
we're taking all of my friends and family with me.
Yes.
So I feel like the question is there a place in the world in which you think you, your friends, and your family would have better thrived socially?
Again. She's just trying to sidestep that whole answer.
I know, but I like this new question better. Because, I mean, like, yeah.
Well, you're the one You're the one that always telling me to not make it overcomplicated, to try to simplify it.
Okay. I mean, yeah, but to me, the answer's real shit, you know, like probably Canada. Like, if I could do it over again,
you were almost.
I would love to be born in some place that's basically like how I live, except maybe a little less pollution, a little less politics that make me want to kill myself, and universal health care. Like, you know, maybe the UK, admittedly, by now I probably would have wanted to get out of there. But I mean, it's a weird question because it's like, it would just be normal for you. Like I could say, oh, the UK, because I've always loved the UK. I'm like, yeah, except if you were born there, the UK stuff would be normal to you and American stuff would be like exotic. So that doesn't work. Then you just have me reincarnating. And every time I'm like, this time I want to be in the UK. UK is fine. I want to be in the US. Why the fuck am I back in the US? It's a terrible system. But yeah, I mean, like, can we go to a country with nicer white people? I'd like that. I'd love to be born in a place with some nicer white people. By which I mean willing to give the citizens fucking universal health care and shit like that. Like, Liechtenstein, that's the thing. I hear Germany's not too bad. All of the Scandinavian shit's pretty good. Like, see, that's not fun. That's just sad.
Okay.
I'm like, yeah, I mean, give me the list of places that didn't elect the worst scummy landlord / reality TV star idiot ever as a president. Any of those will do.
Any of them.
Well, except the UK, because then they got a similar version of that themselves. But, you know.
Oh, she did say Biltmore. I just read it wrong.
Wait.
Sorry, Beth.
So you read it wrong before you said it, or you read her correction wrong?
No, I read her question wrong back when we did that whole thing with where I stayed.
Oh, well.
I can see it now in the.
In that case, I think you need to make it up to her. And literally the only way I can think of is to drink a tequila sunrise. By the way, some of y'all put up some really good looking mocktail recipes on the blog.
Oh, yeah.
I would recommend checking those out if I wasn't me and already had. I would recommend it to the rest of you.
They all look worthy of trying out.
Yeah, Jazz's questions made me real sad.
Okay.
But that's okay, because the first part where we made fun of you made me happy, so.
Oh, good. That balanced it out.
That's why I got you.
Oh.
And this is how it's going to go from now. The questions are slowly going to get darker and darker, and the only balancing aspect will be that I just shit on you more and more. It'll be great. All right.
Everybody wins.
This one from Mick. Mick de Knife, or Mount Knife, depending on how you look at it. I'm bored. Tell me a story and make sure you get the voices right. I mean, okay, we do know getting the voices right is critical.
Yes, it is, for sure.
However, if you don't tell the story in first person and you have no dialogue in your story, you don't ever have to worry about the voices.
I guess.
So, once upon a time, there was an entirely mute civil engineer. He was entirely mute in that he had no mouth.
No mouth.
Just not there. Everything had to get shoved up his nose and then get it. He still had teeth, which was creepy as hell. But like, so you could get it through the sinuses and then he could chew and swallow.
Sure.
He didn't find that out until he was like 4. So it's possible this condition is not as uncommon as we think, but most just don't survive long enough to get it diagnosed.
Understood.
Take it away.
This is a great story so far. Wait, what? You want me to take over?
Yeah, we're telling a story. I'm not doing this on my own.
Oh my gosh.
Partnership. I cannot make fun of you if you do not contribute.
Okay, so he has no mouth.
We went over this in your quarterly evaluation.
Needless to say, wait, so what? This is did you say a civil engineer?
He's a civil engineer.
Did you say it was a man or a woman or what?
Oh, I think I just did. I think I defaulted to male pronouns, which is not fair.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a human.
I mean, you pick now. Well, hold on with it. I flubbed that.
I'll just go with what we already have. So,
all
right. Needless to say,
sorry.
This
random civil bullshit engineer, story so white. Am I right?
The civil engineer was kind of lonely because, as it turns out, especially in a such a stratified and judgmental society such as we live in, a person without a mouth would usually, as the people said who ran from him screaming, freak them out. So this was a considerable problem because he's a human being just like everybody else. He needs friends and he needs a future, and you know, he wanted to have a wife and children and all this stuff. So he didn't really know what he was going to do, and he was very sad. He liked being a civil engineer and it was a very fulfilling job, but it didn't give him all the stuff he wanted. What he really wanted at the end of the day was to fall in love. It gets to go back to you now.
What the hell is wrong with you? Way to go dark with it. Well, somehow you were, I was like, he has teeth inside his sealed skull. And somehow you were like, hold my beer. Let's do just some crushing existential dread.
Hey,
that's what we need.
That's what I do. Crushing existential dread. That's my thing, man. Since I was 2 years old. What do you think when I did when I did those children's stories with Russell, what do you think what that was about?
Was 2 years old and stuck his finger in a light socket and he shot across the room from the shock and his face just got buried in a Calvin and Hobbes trade paperback.
The light socket was when I was 6.
He was in a coma for 8 months, but
wasn't in
the
a coma.
Book had fused to his face. So they dare not remove it. But they did turn the page every night just in case he woke up.
See, you've already forgotten Jazz's email. This is my superpower. That's what it is.
Okay. Fuck our first story. This one's better. Williams, 8 month, 2-year-old Calvin and Hobbes coma.
I mean, the dates don't match up, but that's all right.
Oh, I'm pleased with myself for that one.
And we all know how much you'd like to be pleased with yourself.
And then we tell you, Hobbes is just a toy. He's been a toy this whole time. Like, I want to say, if they didn't, they should have. I feel like Robot Chicken did like a Calvin and Hobbes like Sixth Sense mashup. All right.
I see stuffed animals. They don't know they're stuffed animals.
Most of them don't know they're stuffed animals. And then like a Teddy Ruxpin fucking grabs his ankle at a funeral.
Pushes a box out.
Exactly. No, pushes a cassette tape.
Yeah, cassette tape. That's
what yes, it's yeah. Yeah. I mean, literally, whatever happens. We could just do the remaining episode in silence, and I'm still like, tick, I did my job for today. I'm not good at this.
At what?
Take your pick. No, I'm talking about storytelling. Spontaneous storytelling. I am. It's a format issue. Because like right now, I just largely created an insanely awesome off-the-cuff story about William's childhood traumas. But when you just say, tell me a story, like, I have a hard time. Trish used to ask me to do that. And eventually we sort of got this thing going where I had all these woodland creatures with improbable names and different species so that would normally not hang out together. And then I just throw in like funny human things for them to do. And that's pretty much it. But it was basically nothing. It's me trying to tell a story. When you say, tell me a story, is like a dream sequence thing. I'm like, oh, and then there's this. Let me throw it in. So
I'm not as good at it as I wish I was.
Yeah, that I would love. I want to be somebody who could just, but I'm not sure those exist in real life.
Yeah, I do too. I do too, but I mean, I've had definite moments because like, well, the puppet shows I did were never written. I always had a partner and they were never written down. I would just.
There were no pre-written puppet show stories.
No, I would find out who the person was going to be who was going to help me. And I would say, okay, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. And the only important thing for you to remember is that when I say, when Russell says this, you say this. That's all you have to know.
And at the end, it's going to turn out you are his twin brother.
I didn't tell him what the gag was or anything because I wanted them to laugh or be surprised or whatever it was. And so they were always improvised and I gave just minimal instructions to whoever I was working with. And miraculously, people actually liked working with me on this, but anyhow. So yeah,
back then.
So, I mean, I have been in situations where I had to come up with something really quickly and I was able to do that. So it has happened. But for every one time that I've done it and I thought it was great and other people thought it was great, there have been like five times where it was terrible. I was like, I'm just not consistent. You know, I can't do it consistently.
See, and that story was stolen from an old interview of one of the Smothers brothers. I do not remember which one, but I specifically remember that interview.
But you're right, though. I mean, even people who you think are really great at it, like people on Whose Line Is It Anyway, those people practice and practice and practice. And some of the things they come, I can tell you from experience, because I was an improvisational actor, some of the stuff they come up with that seems like it's just off the top of their head, it's not. They practiced and they used this in another practice or something similar. And that's what allows them to be so quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they practice. I mean, when you
practice, that's the thing. It just becomes a habit of, you know, if you played a word association game 16 hours a day for a while, you'd get really good at associating words.
That's right. That's right. So you know, what you were saying before, like, well, there's not really a person like that. That's kind of true. The people who seem like that really do have to work at it because you know,
yeah.
You need that skill. You have to learn. It's a parlor trick is what it is because people don't know all the work that goes into it. And so they're really impressed with how cool it seems, but really magic tricks are the same. People are impressed with magic tricks because they think, wow, that's something that simple couldn't have taken a long time to develop and learn whatever, but no, they do. And then once you realize how much work and practice and stuff went into it, then you can understand, you know, why it worked and you can start to think that maybe you could do that too if you put that kind of dedication into it.
The time, as I get older, my appreciation for and desire to have an interest in improv skills as a whole goes up, while simultaneously the aspects of my life and my life path and everything in which I might make use of such a thing goes down. So like, yeah, it's less useful for me to know, but for some reason I'm more and more want to like be able to do that.
Huh. Why do you think that is?
I think doing bits might, I think banter might be my happy place.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think that's a, like, Trish and I do that constantly. And when I'm having most fun on here is when you and I are doing it. Like, I think Trish, I just really like doing bits. I don't know. It's fun.
Trish is really good at that.
Trish and I are both pretty good at it because we've been doing it for, you know, 20 years. And oh,
that's
like,
what I mean.
So not, we're particularly good with each other. Like, we're very companionable in how that works.
Right.
And you and I are some too. We have a similar, there was a time where I could not toss you a line. You didn't know you were catching. It would just hit you in the chest and fall on the floor.
Yeah. Good times.
And I still get stuck sometimes because you have that real dry delivery. But more often now I can tell, oh, wait, this is the thing. Okay. He's making a funny.
Yeah. Well, all I'm right. Definitely a person. I mean, even though I've done all this performance stuff and it's worked out, I'm definitely a person that ought to be, if I'm going to do it, I ought to be writing it and let someone else do it, because most people are better at it than I am, even if I'm
okay. Well, I think you have a very, you have strong boundaries as to when it is appropriate.
Well, that's part of it.
Honestly, a lot of improv from a certain perspective, and I mean, I don't think any harm, it's all in good fun and everything, but a lot of improv is just fucking lying.
Well, and also letting things happen that you know are going to be funny without going, but is it going to hurt someone's feeling? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy to be the person that thinks about that and then doesn't do something. But I also acknowledge that if I was going to, say, make a living at this, I'd have to get rid of that, because, and hopefully I wouldn't hurt anyone's feelings. But the thing is when you're concerned about hurting someone's feelings with comedy, you won't even go into a gray area that might be hilarious that nobody would be offended by. But you just, you know, to be extra cautious, you're not going to even take that step. So I don't, you know, I couldn't have those scruples and make a living at it, which is,
luckily, I love lying, especially when there's no consequences, and I don't care about offending people. So I'm built for this. I'm just not that smart. We're out of time here, people. So put your tray tables up and see. Oh God!
Did you really just do that? Did you really? Fly.
It's on my head. I had such a bad time flying.
Mm. Oh, okay.
I arrived at my destination 26 hours late.
Really?
Wow. I mean, to be fair, I went back home and was like, we're going to try this again in the morning.
Wow.
There are so fewer flights now because apparently less people are traveling. But that means that everybody has to show up at the exact same time for the same flights. So airports are either dead, or if you're there, so is everyone else.
Well, there's also a pilot. The number of pilots is down.
Yeah. Also. Yeah. And climate change is not helping the unpredictable weather situation. And the whole industry is still kind of a racket. Just don't fly ever. But I also hate long road trips. So anyway, once we brought the podcast to a complete stop, you can unfasten your seatbelts and remove your, you can turn your phone off podcast mode. I didn't get there. I wanted a joke that, like, instead of airplane mode, you know, it was like,
yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.